Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 183 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, well, women and money. Yeah, and this is going to be a really interesting and incredibly important episode, so listen on up. And before we begin the show, just know that this episode is made possible by our just wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode and rate and review the show. You know, I just sit around twiddling my thumb waiting to hear from you. Yeah, your feedback is platinum. I want to hear you, okay? That's an order. And I'll be reminding you about this at the end of the episode as well. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Well, you know, how many of you know, unless this has happened to you, that one day you find yourself in a situation where all the financial burdens of your life, everything, the obligations, responsibilities, everything falls right into your lap. This happens for a lot of reasons, including widowhood. You know, I read an article in the Wall Street Journal, and this was authored by Maddie Dykewald, who is our fabulous expert guest today. And in it, she absolutely blew my mind with the reality of what happens to so many women out there when they suddenly face this. Boom! You know, it's almost like a crack across your head. Oh my God, what am I going to do? All right, so Maddie Dykewald is the perfect go-to person to address this. She's an internationally recognized author, entrepreneur, business advisor, and thought leader on the age wave, on how longevity and the ascent of women are actually transforming the marketplace, the workplace, the retirement scape, and our very lives. Since co-founding AgeWave more than 30 years ago, Maddie and her team have worked with more than half of the Fortune 500 industries, ranging from pharmaceuticals and medical technology to financial services and marketing. You know, she wrote a book called Influence, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. I'm telling you right now, if you don't have this book, get it. Because if you think you have no economic power, Maddie's got a different way to reframe that and to redefine this in your life. So Maddie, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, what got you writing this article in the first place? What was going on?
That's a really interesting question. Well, I have two passions in terms of my work. One of them is this whole idea of living longer, this longevity revolution that we're in the middle of. And not only are we in the middle of it, but women are leading the way. I mean, women outlive men by about 5 years. And we're, you know, let's be honest about it. Women are pioneering this. And there's a lot of opportunities, which are exciting. But there's also some challenges that come along with it. And one of them has to do with the life stage that we call widowhood. And, you know, so that's one thing. The second thing is this whole women's thing. I'm really focused on the fact that not only is longevity important, but women are transforming the way the world works right now. And we see it so much in, for instance, the, you know, hashtag Me Too movement that's going on right now. We see it on all the focus that we are hearing about in terms of the pay gap and what that really means. So it's all around us. It's almost in the air we breathe. And taking those two concepts of longevity and the power of women and putting them together and then focusing in on one issue.
Maddie, tell us about widows and widowers. So you said in your article that your research shows that the majority of widows and widowers at 64%, who had not done any planning, this is financial planning, were burdened by worries about supporting themselves financially while dealing with all of the grief thing. And you said that the problem is particularly pronounced among women. And I was blown away by the numbers. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are 20 million widowed individuals in America today, most of whom, and that's 78%, are women. Whoa. So, I mean, that's a shock, I think, to the grand majority of people. Explain all of that.
Yeah, you know, I think we, like, almost instinctively understand that, when you think about widowhood, you think about primarily women, and our instincts are right. 78%, as you just pointed out, of widows are women. And by the way, there's 1.4 million new widows just in the United States every single year. So that's an amazing thing. We don't really think about when we say our vows till death do us part that one of us is actually going to die before the other. And it's oftentimes a man, because a woman generally outlives a man, and a woman generally, even in today's world, or on average, we're marrying men a couple years older than us. So you put those two things together and you get lots of women alone at the end of life. And by the way, our study, let me backtrack for a minute. We did this study in partnership with Bank America Merrill Lynch on widowhood, and we really took a deep dive into the subject to better understand what makes people tick in this stage of life, not just from a financial point of view, but how the finances actually can affect us in an emotional way. So, for instance, in our study, we learned that most widows say that the single hardest stage of life for them and the single hardest event that they've gone through has been widowhood. So, I mean, it's a really hard thing. And the thing that makes it so hard is it's the beginning of a grieving process at the same time that there's so much that you have to take care of. And a lot of that stuff is financial. And by the way, a lot of the women today who are, in fact, making these financial decisions while they're going through the grief said that they were not making financial decisions by themselves before their spouse died. Only about 14% said that they were making those kinds of decisions financially by themselves. And then suddenly, like most women who are widowed, 86% report having to make those financial decisions by themselves for the first time in many instances. So imagine what that's like. That's difficult.
I know. And, you know, it just at that time in life, when all heck's breaking out otherwise. I mean, you've got medical things going on for yourself. You've got children, grandchildren. You've got, you know, maybe career stuff, or maybe, you know, are you going to have to switch where you live and how you live, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot. I'm just blown away by the mere 14%. 14% say they were making financial decisions alone before their spouse died. I mean, that just blew me away. And it's a big deal. I mean, most people think, well, it's just, you know, balancing your checkbook. No. There's so much going on. You've got, you know, many people have limited incomes. And so how are you going to make all of that work? They sort of had someone else doing that for a long time. And now all of a sudden there are, well, there are little surprises too. You know, you find out, whoopsies. Maybe you're more in debt than you thought you were because, you know, your spouse never really told you, or other things. You know, there's plenty of little issues like this. So, you know, instead of just concentrating on the dark side of this, you also say something that made me feel really, you know, wonderful. And that was that you found in your study that over time, most widows and widowers, and in this case, the actual number from the study is 77%, so it's a mass majority, say they discover an inner courage and resiliency they never knew they had. And so when they're forced to jump into complex financial matters, from the start of their journey and adjust to making their own financial decisions, they're actually finding that they're becoming stronger in many respects. How is that possible? I was actually astounded by the number. I thought it would be lower, but I was really delighted to see that it was 77%. So what's going on there?
Yeah, now it's good news. It's really good news. Let's put it into a larger context about this whole idea of women, confidence, and money. And there's this assumption that we have in our society that women don't feel confident about making financial decisions. Well, that's just not true. In another study that we did this past year, which was really interesting, it was about women and financial wellness, getting beyond the bottom line. What we discovered was that when it comes to money and financial decision making, women are just as confident as men, except when it comes to investing. So that's the place where women are not quite up to speed yet. But as you just pointed out in your comments, with time, and this is the important point, with time, widows begin to feel that they're rebuilding and reinventing themselves in some positive ways. I mean, they need to get through the grief, get through those early financial decisions, and then most of them say, as you pointed out, that they discover this kind of courage that they never even knew they had. They figure out how to do things. They know who to ask for advice, people they trust. And they also, you know, they're very savvy when it comes to the internet and discovering information and how to utilize that information effectively. So women find this inner strength and resiliency that they just never knew they had. And that's a fantastic thing.
I love it. And you know, tell us a little bit about the book. You know, again, you wrote the book Influence, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. Tell us more about the book, because I want to make sure all of our listeners on the Her podcast really understand, you know, your major thrust there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think what we've seen is over the last, I mean, women have transformed who they are pretty dramatically. I mean, think back in time. If we were to go to, like, my grandmother, she wouldn't believe the way the world works now. She wouldn't believe the fact that women are more educated than men in general, which gives them more opportunity for advancement in careers. And, you know, almost half of all jobs today are held by women. That's like a dramatic shift that we've seen in our lifetimes. And with that, we've seen women's financial wherewithal grow pretty dramatically. So is it where it should be? No, it's not. But we have come a long way. And with that, we've gained financial power. And what's really interesting to me is that women wield their financial power slightly different than men. Now, I'm not saying that men don't care about social impact, but what I am saying is that women in our studies have told us that they're more likely to invest in social impact causes and issues that they really care about than men are. Now, does that mean they don't want returns? No, they definitely are looking for performance, and they're definitely looking for security, but they also want to invest in issues and causes and socially important issues that really matter to them. And they're doing it. They're putting their money where their mouth is. And to me, I think that that can transform the way the world works. And we're seeing it already. We're seeing it take place. And to me, that's very exciting.
Well, give me some examples.
Off the top of my head, some examples. Well, one example is that in our most recent study that I referenced before, the Women in Financial Wellness, what we learned is that 66% of women are really interested in investing in social impact. So many women don't exactly know what that means, and they want to learn and they want to make that kind of investment. And we're seeing it happen more and more. So even if your job isn't in the world of nonprofit, and let's say you really care about breast cancer, women are investing in both the nonprofit sector and also in, like, investment causes that are, in fact, related to breast cancer. Another great example, and I'll give it to you from my own life. My financial advisor knows that I'm really interested, passionate really, about this whole women's issue. So he recently suggested to me that I invest in a mutual fund that only invests in companies that have women in leadership positions and in the executive offices. And by the way, that fund happens to be doing incredibly well. It's been getting more than 15% return every single year. And so not only am I investing and making some money, I'm also investing in companies that are doing the right thing. And what that shows us really is that by companies investing in their women employees and giving them opportunities for leadership growth, it has a very positive impact on the bottom line. And there have been studies that show that to be the case. So that's like the perfect example.
I love that. And I'm actually interested in a lot of companies where there's one in particular I was thinking right off the cuff about that invests in women and startups. And so, you know, women need to have guidance, you know, with their entrepreneurship. They need to have senior business advice. And this is a beautiful way to be able to not only invest in the particular companies, but also to mentor and to take on other layers of roles that are of importance. You know, to the women as they try to really, you know, begin their own journey as successful businesswomen. I love that. I think that that's fabulous. And these companies, are the mass majority of them are basically, women in leadership roles as CEOs, founders, COOs. I think that these kinds of organizations are growing in number because women are really finding that they can now network and find those resources to become successful with. Whereas I think before, you know, let's look at 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I don't think that it was that user-friendly at all. So I'm glad that you're doing that type of investment. Don't you think?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. You mentioned a couple words that I want to respond to. You mentioned networking, mentoring. I was part of the Wall Street Journal Women in the Economy Task Force a few years ago, and one of the interesting things that came out of that task force was this whole idea of mentorship versus sponsorship. And this is a really interesting point because women are very likely to get mentors. And that's people generally in their organization, sometimes out of their organization, who helps them, you know, gives them ideas about what their job is about and how to do it better. But getting a sponsor is something that men are more likely to do than women, and women need to start doing. And that is that they find someone in their organization, could be a man, could be a woman, it doesn't matter, but someone senior to them who could not only teach them about their job, but kind of take them under their wing, make sure that they get the soft skills that they need so that they can succeed and move up the food chain. And that is probably more important than anything because they need somebody to really tout their name. Tell other senior leaders that, you know, here's somebody that we ought to really groom for the C-suite or groom for senior leadership positions and, you know, take them by the hand and help move them forward. And that's what women need to really focus on. How do I move my career forward in a way that's assertive and well-meaning at the same time?
I love it. You know, I just saw in the Wall Street Journal, I believe it was Monday, it was a really interesting article called Secrets of Wealthy Women. And in this case, it was Maria Sharapova on how she's won off the court. And at first I thought, okay, well, it's just an article about, you know, Sharapova. Okay, fine. It turns out it wasn't. It's actually an introduction to something the Wall Street Journal's doing now, which is a podcast called Secrets of Wealthy Women. And so I highly recommend Yeah, I mean, don't you think? I mean, I had no clue. And I'm not quite sure when it was actually launched, but I think they have maybe half a dozen interviews now with really amazing people. And this one was a wake-up call to, you know, click on to and then download and subscribe. It's for free, you know, once you obviously subscribing to the Wall Street Journal. And I found that the interviews I listened to were rich. They were a nice amalgam of personal and professional life. And that when Sharapova went through so many of her challenges, including having to be suspended for a year on what they call drug charges because of some kind of medication she was taking, that she fought quite fiercely, but she was off for a year, et cetera. You know, how do you rebound? You know, how do you, you know, do that whole resilience thing? And she literally said that it was all about teaching how to be able to be optimally resilient, the ability to adapt and adjust to no matter what happens to you in life, and not to run from your own fears about what's going on. And I thought this is the kind of discussion women need to hear. And it's also coming from women who have financially done very well. And they did it quite creatively, and they did it despite all odds. So it's important. Yeah. It's important to understand that, you know, this is, you know, these stories are everywhere. It's just that no one took the time to be able to listen to them. You know, when Sharapova came to the United States with her father, they had $700 between them. That's all they ever had.
Wow.
You know, she didn't have a whole lot. So she
That's inspiring. That's totally inspiring.
Yeah, I know. I mean, not every story's like that. But on the other hand, it's really cool to be able to hear something where you can not only identify, perhaps, but also you can aspire to be someone strong, you know, someone who is resilient. Because at the end of the day, the most critical element of survival, period, is resilience. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think resiliency is a very important word, and especially for women. You know, think about it. Women take a lot more time out of the workplace than men, and oftentimes for caregiving, caring for their kids, caring for their parents or their in-laws, caring for some kind of caregiver for their spouses. I mean, these kinds of breaks requires a kind of adaptation to both the workforce and being out of the workforce so that you can find your way back in, which, by the way, is not so easy to do. And women are put in the position much more than men are to really try to face that challenge. And we need to learn from each other.
Oh, there's no question about that. You know, reentering a workforce that's changed like there's no tomorrow, I can't imagine something scarier. You know, new technology. Mm-hmm. And then it depends upon your age. You know, it's one thing to re-enter when you're
41. Yeah, there's a lot of older women that want to work that don't have the opportunity or don't know how to find the opportunity.
Well, now you and your wonderful husband, Ken, you know, founders of AgeWave, everyone needs to run on over to AgeWave. This is extraordinary data. It's age, like A-G-E, wave, WAVE.com. You know, you speak to a very important point in a lot of the work you've done in AgeWave, which is the whole issue of ageism. And that is making stereotypic assumptions that if you're 50 and over, you're kind of finished. That, you know, what value do you hold to the workplace? You know, and the answer is a lot. But I think that in this more youth-oriented culture, some of that gets skipped over in a heartbeat and a half. How does a woman work with that, Maddie?
Well, I personally think that women have always had challenges to face. I mean, just being a woman in the workplace has its challenges, even today. I mean, my daughter, who recently entered the workforce, has really reported to me some of the issues that she faces as a young woman in the workforce, and they're challenges. They really are. But as an older woman, I think that as much as we say, oh, being older is the same for women as it is for men, it's not. Women face a little bit more of a prejudice, you know, that we're valued oftentimes by the way we look and act far more than men are. What we need to do is really focus on the wisdom and the experience that we can bring to the workforce. And I think that if we can communicate that effectively and let people understand how much vitality, energy, as well as that wisdom and experience we can bring to a particular position. And, you know, frankly, we need to keep our skill set pretty focused on everything that's going on today. I mean, we can't just rely on our experience and our wisdom, although it's really important. We need to make sure that our skills are up to date. And that requires a little bit of learning continuously. By the way, my daughter, who's in her 20s, tells me she's continuously having to learn and update her skills. So it's not just for women who are older. It's for all of us. You know, hold on to that wisdom and experience. Find ways to express it and then keep your skill set up to date.
Oh, there's no question about that. And this is also goes into my wheelhouse, which is the whole thing about healthy lifestyle. You know, you said to keep up your skills technologically and in terms of knowledge base. Well, girlfriends out there, I'm here to tell you, you got to keep up with your body and your mind too. Now, come on. So it's a package deal. If you are the smartest person on the planet with particular technology, but your body's falling apart, come on. I mean, how are you going to enjoy any of this? So it's like a dual responsibility. You have a professional, you know, obligation to yourself to stay up on technology, knowledge base on whatever you want to do, you know, expanding your professional interests, etc. Because Lord knows, the world is changing pretty quickly. At the same time, I always say that the foundation for all of this is to have a healthy mind and body. If you have enough sleep, if you're eating appropriately, if you're staying physically fit, I never mentioned the Olympics. I just said if you're staying physically fit, then when you bounce into a room, your level of energy, your glow, your passion, all of that will manifest itself. And so what you end up doing is actually having an extraordinarily positive experience wherever it's humanly possible to happen. But you can't do that if you really haven't been taking care of yourself. Now, yes, I agree with you, Maddie. The onus of the burden is much worse for women than it is for men. You know, so many of us see men who really haven't been on top of their little self-care program, and they're forgiven for their sins. You know, I mean, did I say that in a PC way or what? I hope I got an A plus. Yeah, I know. Yeah, basically, they look like shipwrecks, and we can't. Because if we look like a shipwreck, then the whole stereotype thing starts rolling out and then we're dead.
Yeah, we're not invited to the party.
Nope. We don't get to do that party. One of my patients once told me, she said, you know, I'm forgiven for the sin of being 60 because I look 40. And that's because she takes ridiculous care. Hello. Mm. And, you know, when someone has to say, get out of here, you're not 60, you know, that type of thing. And there it is. It just keeps happening. When's the last time a guy said that? Just really, seriously.
Yeah, really.
They don't put
very much value on it.
I know. And I'm just arguing that, you know, as you traverse your longevity path in life, you're a package deal professionally and personally.
That's right.
And you got to see it that way. It's really, you know. So, I mean, this has just been absolutely marvelous. I really wanted to bring up this whole issue of women, finances, empowerment, and their ability to be able to optimize their workplace experience, let alone their personal experience. And, you know, you've really given us all the opportunity here on the podcast to listen to so much of that. As we close up the podcast, tell me, You know, any last words of wisdom as women scratch their heads and say, okay, how do I prepare for this? How do I make sure that I'm on top of my finances and that, you know, should something happen and tomorrow all the burden falls on me or back and forth, what should they be doing?
Okay, well, let me say two things about that. First, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I think there are several pillars that hold us up throughout our lives, but particularly playing this longevity game, and that is health, which you mentioned, your health and wellness. Second is your finances, and third is your professional, you know, I would even add fourth, your personal life. You know, how do those four pillars really hold together your entire life, and how do they interact with each other? So that's one thing that I think we should all be thinking about big picture. But second, as you just pointed out, you know, if you're married, and you, something happens to your spouse and they pass away and you're going through this grieving period, chances are you're going to either have to go through probate or you're going to have to deal with a trust. Make sure that you have the permission to access your spouse's account. Make sure that you know that you have to file as a beneficiary for your spouse's retirement account. Make sure that you have the passwords and the usernames for all of the various files that you guys have together or separately in terms of accounts, insurance accounts, whether it be life insurance, even auto insurance and homeowners insurance. Make sure that you have all that. Make sure that you understand you need to file for survivor's social security. I mean, there's like so many things that you need to do. So make a list, and these lists are very available online of all the things that you need to take care of. But instead of doing it after your spouse passes away, sit down with your spouse and talk about it together and make a list together so that this, you can rest, you can have some peace of mind, because you don't
want to
be worrying about that while you're experiencing grief.
Exactly. I think, you know, to be prepared is where it's at. If you, you know, failed to plan, you plan to fail. And you've got to have that plan in place. I just love this. Everyone, we've been talking to Maddie Dykewald, really, honestly, an expert in all things finances and women. Please run out, grab her book, Influence, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. Run on over to her website, Maddie, that's M-A-D as in dog, M-A-D-D-Y, Dykewald, D-Y-C-H-T-W-A-L-D.com. And then also AgeWave, like I mentioned before, Age, A-G-E, Wave, W-A-V-E.com, to learn all about the wonderful work she and her husband, Ken, and their team are doing in the whole world, the realm of longevity in general, especially as it relates to finances. Maddie, thank you so much for being on the Her Show. We can't thank you enough. Oh my gosh. And I want everyone out there to please run on over to iTunes now, rate and review the show, because we want to hear from you. What kind of questions came up in your mind? What was really important to you? I'm here and I'm raring to go to listen to your feedback. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. And hey, you better stay well.